I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Dori Clark. Dori is an adjunct professor at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business and the author of Entrepreneurial You, Reinventing You, and Stand Out, which was named the number one leadership book of 2015 by Inc. magazine. A former presidential campaign spokeswoman, the New York Times described her as an expert at self-reinvention and helping others make changes in their lives. A frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review, Dori consults and speaks for clients including Google, Microsoft, and the World Bank. Dori, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you on again.
David, it is a treat to reconnect. Thanks for having me.
Right. So you and I were chatting a little bit before we hit the record button about consistency in creating content. I know you've been very consistent in all the stuff that you've produced. I've tried to be consistent. I'm pleased that we're now entering our fourth year of the podcast, and I'm just so pleased that this is now your third time in this show. So welcome back. Great to have you again.
Thank you. Yeah, the most important consistency to have is to be a consistent guest on Smashing the Plateau. So I believe in that strongly.
Thanks so much. So I'm a huge fan of your work, and you really embody what it means to smash the plateau, both as an individual and as a leader. And I'd like to start with a quote from your latest book, Entrepreneurial You, in which you write the following. Today, after more than a decade as an entrepreneur, my opinion has reversed. I now believe it's far riskier not to be diversified. If you're relying on one paycheck from one employer, you may be courting disaster. The old model, the one that most of us grew up hearing about, work hard, get a good job, and you'll be rewarded, has changed. Hard work is still mandatory, but today the work has shifted toward an ever more independent, work from wherever you are business economy. The very idea of what constitutes a career has transformed. Well, I have to say, Dori, this is quite a fundamental statement. And believe it or not, over 30 years ago, I began to see trends in the way we work that have led to these kinds of working arrangements, the ones that you describe in your book. Why do you think it's so risky to depend on a job?
Well, in many ways, David, this view, which in later years and throughout the course of writing and researching my books, I've now spent a lot of time studying and researching in depth, it was informed by something that happened to me at the very start of my career. I was 22 years old. I had just finished graduate school, and I got a job as a newspaper reporter. And I was doing it for about a year. And one day I got called into the HR office and was completely shocked when they laid me off. Now, it doesn't sound surprising these days because everybody probably knows some journalists that have been laid off. In fact, 40% of American journalists lost their jobs between 2000 and 2010. So it's just been a wide-scale decimation. But this was at the very beginning. This was 2001. And so it really was unexpected for me. And I was at the start of my career and literally with a moment's notice, lost my job. I woke up the next morning and thought, okay, well, I've got to get out there. I've got to find another position. And it turned out that the day that they laid me off was Monday, September 10th, 2001. And so the next day, to put it mildly, was not a good day to start looking for a job. And with that chaos, that sense of fear, I mean, they gave me a week's severance pay. And I had actually even worked one of those days. So they gave me 4 days severance pay. And I somehow had to figure out how to pay my bills after that. And I realized in that moment, I had put myself at risk without even knowing it. The thing that seems secure may not be secure. And what I've come to believe over time through my own career as an entrepreneur and the research that I've done leading up to Entrepreneurial You is that if we can create multiple income streams for ourselves, certainly as an entrepreneur, but even if you are employed by someone else, if you can create something that is yours on the side, that is the way to be secure and to be able to weather whatever storms are coming at you economically.
You know, knowing your story, it certainly hit home with me, because a similar thing happened to me when I was in my 20s. Several decades before it happened to you, this was the early 1980s. Same situation. I was working as an engineer, which I was led to believe was a very secure kind of profession. I was in my second job, earning good money, doing well, good performance reviews. And one day my boss calls me into his office, and the same thing. He says, David, I have some bad news for you. You're out of a job. And the same thing. I went from 100% compensation to zero. And it's a tough thing to figure out. Well, what am I going to do next? And it took me a long time to understand how to mitigate the financial risk and look for multiple streams of revenue that you describe so aptly in your book. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you've observed and what it is you're recommending. Do you see, first of all, do you see being an employee or an entrepreneur an either or situation?
It certainly doesn't have to be. In fact, one of the things that was most interesting to me as I was researching Entrepreneurial You was the stories of people who have full-time day jobs and like that and want to do that, but nonetheless have been able to benefit tremendously in their careers from the activities that they engaged in on the side. And so just as one example, there's a guy that I profile in Entrepreneurial You. This actually started out as a Harvard Business Review piece that I wrote and later incorporated into the book. His name is Lenny Achan, and he started his career as a nurse, and he worked for Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. I found out about him because I did some consulting work there. And anyway, by the time I was consulting for Mount Sinai, Lenny had managed to work himself up to be the head of communications for the hospital, which is not at all a likely career path for a nurse. It just didn't even really make sense. But everybody was talking about him, about this guy who had this fast, almost inexplicable rise. And so when I finally got to meet him, I asked him about it and how he had done it. And it turned out that one of his experiences was he had gotten fascinated with the world of social media and apps. And he decided that as just a sort of personal and professional development project, just something he wanted to do, that he would start a little side business creating apps. And so he made a couple apps and got them set, put them in the app store, and did that. And anyway, one day, similar to you and me, he gets called into his boss's office, and he's not sure what it's about. The boss says, you know, Lenny, I hear you've been creating apps. And he was pretty panic stricken at that point because he thought, oh no, am I in trouble? Was this a problem? Was there something that I did wrong? And he waited a beat, and the boss said, you know, that's really interesting. We have a new position heading up social media at the hospital. We'd like you to take it. And so that was how Lenny managed to get into the world of communications. And he ended up doing such a great job. He got promoted to being the head of communications for the entire hospital. Now, he never would have even been considered for that if he hadn't done something different and unexpected on his own time that put him in contention for it. But I think that's a perfect example for someone. Even if you want to work for a company, even if that is your goal and your intention and you don't want anything different, doing entrepreneurial side projects can actually be the thing that separates you from the competition.
Something else strikes me about this story, which is what you're describing is a method of learning that is very different from certainly the one that I went through in school, where I was taught many years and lots of engineering courses, and I was expected when I finished to have a skill that I could use over and over again in various jobs.
Yes, that's right. Having an experimental mindset, just being able to roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty, practice with things on your own time is really valuable. I mean, one other example, this is not specifically an entrepreneurial example, but it has a lot of parallels, is a story that I tell in my first book, Reinventing You, about a woman named Karen Turer. And Karen, when I first got to know her, she was young, she was in her 20s, and she worked in volunteer management at a nonprofit. But one of the hats that I wore in the past was I was the executive director of a bicycling advocacy organization, and Karen was one of our board members. Now, you know, she was young, she didn't have a lot of money to throw around, but so the way that she decided that she would make her contribution as a board member because she couldn't give a lot of money was she wanted to help raise a lot of money. So she volunteered to be the person really in charge of an annual event we did, which was the Mass Bike Festival. And it was a big, you know, multi-hundred person bike riding event. And she handled almost every aspect of it. And she loved it so much. She did it for 5 years, raised tens of thousands of dollars for the organization. And in the process, she discovered something she probably wouldn't have learned otherwise, which is that she loved event planning and fundraising. And so she ultimately was able to change her career path. She got hired by a major local university as a fundraiser, not on the strength of her resume or anything she was doing in her day job, but on the strength of what she did on her own time volunteering for MassBike. Now, you know, more than a decade later, she has her own business focused on event planning, and it really started there.
Yeah, and it's another great example of following your interests, experimenting, and learning in the process.
That's right.
Now, all of these transformations that you've described, I'm sure have their challenges as well. Dory, what have you found to be some of the most challenging aspects of either being an employee or an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think that's an important question to raise, David. The path is definitely not always easy. One of the stories that I tell in Entrepreneurial You that really stands out for me, in fact, is about a guy named Danny Eaney, who has now become very well-known and very successful teaching people to create online courses. But the way that he got there was a pretty convoluted path. He had started out with an expertise in marketing, and a number of years ago, he decided, hey, wouldn't it be great to do an online course? And so, you know, this was his first go round. So he decided that he would create this course that was massive and comprehensive. It was literally everything a human being could want to know about marketing. He called it Marketing That Works. And he set out to sell this to his audience. And the really sad thing, we can probably all relate to this, it sold one copy. And he was so depressed. But the really depressing thing was that he essentially had put 6 months' work into this course. And if you divided that by one, it meant that he made less than minimum wage for all his hours and all his efforts. It was just so depressing. And so it took him years to want to try to do another online course. But when he did, he made a crucial distinction up front. He said, you know what? I am never going to let that happen again. I'm never going to just roll the dice and create something and assume that people want it. And so instead, for this second iteration that he did of an online course, he sent out an email to his audience beforehand and said, hey guys, I am thinking of creating a course. And if I do, it's going to look like X, Y, and Z. If you are interested in this, sign up here. You will get a very discounted price because you'll be the pilot participants. And in exchange for that, I'd really appreciate your feedback about what you like about the course, what you don't, etc. And so by framing it like that, he basically viewed it as a risk mitigation strategy. If nobody signed up, if one person signed up, he could just say, there's not enough interest. I'm not going to do it. But instead, it turned out there was a lot of interest. And so he moved forward. And then with their help, with the help of the actual participants, you know, real people that he could talk to and say, you know, what do you want this course to be? He was able to create something great that people really did want. And so when the time came later for him to launch it more fully, he knew it was a great product and it ended up selling very well. And that started him on the path of really having expertise in online courses. And so I think, you know, to answer your question, when you ask what is hardest about entrepreneurship or being entrepreneurial, whether you work for a company or not, one of the challenges is that in our culture, we are not yet trained. It is not yet the default impulse to do things that way. The cultural myth we have is, oh, I'm just going to cook up this amazing thing in secret in my garage, and then I'm going to put it out into the world and then everyone's going to love it. And, you know, of course, that's the hope. But more often, people see your product, you put all the time and effort into, and they don't want it. And it's tragic, and it doesn't have to happen. The entrepreneurial mindset really is about testing, about iterating, about piloting. And if we can all embrace that just a little bit more, it will save us heartache and it will make for a better customer experience and a better creator experience.
So with that in mind, Dory, what do you think are the top actionable steps that we need to take if we are either thinking like an entrepreneur and we are actually an employee, or we are in fact an entrepreneur?
Well, I think, David, that if we're talking about specific steps that people can take, one of the most important is that whatever you're working on, if it's a draft of a memo that you're creating, or if you are thinking of launching some new initiative, there is so much fear still in our culture that people will steal your ideas, or oh no, I can't let them see that because then they'll find a way to crush it and shoot it down. And that's the mindset. And so we hold it in reserve, we keep it secret for too long and then bring it out. And so what I would like to encourage people to do instead is to put things out there much earlier. You and I were actually talking before, and you alluded to a quote. John Lee Dumas has said this, although I believe the originator of it is Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, which is that if you release a product that you're not embarrassed by, at least initially, that you have waited too long. And some people might hear that and say, oh, well, but I don't want to release a crappy product. But this is the key. As Reid Hoffman has clarified, he said, look, the crucial word is embarrassed. You don't want to be ashamed of your product. You don't want to be indicted for your product. But to be a little bit embarrassed, to be a little bit uncertain about it, I think is actually not a bad thing. I was just actually listening to a podcast interview recently with the author Shane Snow, who's actually a friend of mine, the author of a book called Smart Cuts. And he was talking about a relationship that he's entered into with someone who actually started as a critic. It was an academic who wrote a piece basically trashing Shane Snow and really just sort of eviscerating some of his ideas. But Shane reached out to him afterwards, and they were able to build up a kind of gracious friendship. And so now what Shane has started doing, and what this gentleman has started doing in return, is that before they even publish, they will share their work with each other for the other person to essentially rip it up in advance so that they can then incorporate that feedback into the draft and make it stronger and better. And so whatever you're doing, whatever you're presenting, if you make a presentation to your boss or to the board or whatever, have some pre-conversations. Don't just spring things on people. They're a lot more likely to be resistant that way. Instead, have these sort of pre-side conversations, get their feedback, hear their concerns, and then you can incorporate that in to make your case in an even more effective and salient way.
Yeah, that's a great idea, to share things early. What's next? What else?
Yeah, there's so many great pieces that we can be thinking about and incorporating. I would say, another key lesson that I learned in the course of writing Entrepreneurial You is to think about what you can offer to people that might be helpful and a little bit unique. And that might sound like, oh yeah, right? But let me press it a little bit further and get into the specifics, because I think this is a really important point. There's a story I tell in the book about a guy named Derek Halpern, who has now built up a pretty significant following for his website, Social Triggers, which focuses on kind of persuasion, behavioral economics, that kind of thing. And the way that he started, like all of us, he started from zero. He started out as an unknown guy. But what his background had been in beforehand was that he had run an entertainment gossip website. Now, as a result of this, he knew quite a bit about how to optimize websites, you know, how to get people to click, how to get people to subscribe. But he didn't know anyone in the business or the marketing world, which was the world that he wanted to go into. So he essentially did an inventory and he said, look, you know, I'm really strong when it comes to knowledge of, you know, of websites, of analytics, of how to get conversions there. I'm pretty weak in terms of my network because the place that I want to move into, I don't even know anyone there. And so what he did to establish himself very rapidly and be able to make very high profile connections was that essentially all at one time, he reached out to a number of top influencers in the business and marketing fields, and he made them an offer. And his offer was, hey, I am happy to get on a free call with you, a free video call, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is. And he said, I have a lot of experience in terms of optimizing websites. And I think that there are some very simple things you can do to make yours a lot more effective. I can go over that with you, share that with you. If you like what you hear, and if it works, you know, test it out, see if it works. If it works, I would like you to post the video to share with other people. Now, this was a pretty strong offer, you know, no risk, right, for these folks. And so almost everyone said, sure, no problem. And so he does these critique sessions, gives people what turns out to be valuable advice, and they post the videos. Now, what has happened is that almost instantly, Derek was able to, number one, establish close advisory relationships with the key influencers in his field, because, you know, they're turning to him for advice, right? It's not that he's a supplicant. He has something valuable to share and they are listening. And number two, he was able to very dramatically showcase social proof in his new field because he had all of these, you know, celebrities in their niche posting videos where they were listening to him and taking advice from him. So it was a virtuous circle. He said that literally from that activity alone, he was able to get about 10,000 email subscribers, and that even today, years later, those videos, which are still up online, are yielding subscribers for him. So even if you are weak in certain metrics, like Derek was in his network, if you can think about what your previous experience has given you an advantage in that other people might not have, you can leverage that very successfully.
Right. And so looking at what is it that the recipient that you are going to be speaking to needs, and think about how you can offer something that would be helpful that's really either no risk or low risk to the recipient so that they're likely to help you in an area where you need reciprocity.
Exactly, yes.
Bingo. Okay, what else? What other steps? These are great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, I think that another piece that bears mentioning when it comes to thinking more entrepreneurially and really being able to max that out is understanding that oftentimes there are discouragements along the way, essentially, that it's easy to get down about yourself or about the process, because, you know, almost always, as with any worthwhile goal, it takes longer than we want, or it takes longer than we think it should. And so a lot of people drop off and give up on the way. In fact, we were just talking earlier about this with regard to podcasts. You have now, at this point, as we're recording this, have done 300 plus episodes, which is, you know, really pretty impressive. However, there was a really interesting study that was done in 2015. And this study showed that the average podcast, now people say, oh gosh, it would be so hard to succeed with a podcast, right? There's just so much competition, blah, blah, blah. I could never get heard. But the truth is, yes. Are there hundreds of thousands of podcasts? Yes, there are. But the average podcast lasts 6 months, 12 episodes, period, the end. So if we just think about that for a minute, someone commits to doing a podcast and odds are they can keep it up 12 times and then they fold it. If you are somebody who literally, you know, all you have, you might not even feel like you are any different than anybody else. You might say, oh, well, there's nothing special about me, blah, blah, blah. But if the thing about you is that you are able to be persistent, if you are able to say, you know what, I'll start a podcast and I just won't stop, that immediately sets you apart from literally almost everybody else. That longevity can be crucial. And one of the people that I interviewed, in fact, for Entrepreneurial You is Jordan Harbinger, who's the host of the Art of Charm podcast, which is an iTunes top 50 podcast, you know, gets millions of downloads per month. And major part of his success is that he has been doing it for over a decade. He's been consistently producing content since 2007. And that has built up an incredibly loyal listener base for him.
Yeah, people, when you're producing something, people tend to expect it to appear on a certain schedule. It's sort of interesting how that mindset works, so that if you're able to do it consistently and do just what you say, which is be persistent about it, it really does set you apart. And I think persistence sets you apart, whether it's content creation or anything else in business and in life. People who are persistent get noticed disproportionately.
Absolutely.
Any other tip that you want to mention before we close out?
Yeah, thank you, David. I appreciate it. Well, one more that I will share actually on that theme is the story of a gentleman that I profile in Entrepreneurial You named James Clear. And James does something that I thought was fascinating. He is a guy, he's a blogger. He writes about habits. He writes about fitness. You know, I mean, he has very smart, thoughtful, detailed posts, but you might look at him on the surface and say, okay, well, you know, that's great, but what's so special about him? What's so different about him? But if you dig into his work, James has amassed a massive following of email subscribers. The last time I checked, it might even be more now. It was over 250,000 email subscribers receiving regular updates from him. And the way that he, you know, what he attributes his success to, the reason that he has been able to build that up so dramatically, is he said that in late 2012, he made a commitment. And up to that point, he had been just kind of scattershot, just kind of haphazard with his blogging schedule. He wrote good stuff, but people didn't know when it was coming out. You know, he'd just do it when he could or when he felt like it. But he decided, you know what? This is not really going to work. This is not really going to take off until I get serious about it. And so he decided that he would write posts every Monday and Thursday without fail. And so he announced that to people, that was his intention, and he kept doing it. And he was able to build a huge following. He published them on his blog. And because other publications knew that he was so consistent and so high quality, they started reaching out to him. So places like Entrepreneur, Business Insider, et cetera. And they said, James, we like your stuff. Can we syndicate your content? So he, without any additional effort, was now able to reach huge numbers of additional audiences because he had caught the eye of these venues through his quality and his consistency. And so he's been growing his email by just exponential numbers, but it really started with that commitment. And what he says, when he looks back, he can think of a guy that was a fitness blogger that he really admired in the early days. And he said, you know, in many ways, his stuff was better than mine, but that guy still has a pretty small following. And the difference, he said, was their consistent schedules, that he had one and his colleague didn't.
Yeah. It's such a great lesson. Persistence really does pay off. So Dora, you've cited some great tips, great examples, and you've mentioned some great stories to support all those. Whom do you know personally who's really been successful at smashing plateaus?
Yeah, thank you, David. I have, you know, so many great friends and colleagues that have done great stuff. But if I was going to point to a specific example, this is actually someone who's a very close friend of mine and someone that I profile in the book as well, Jenny Blake. And Jenny has actually managed to do something that I think is maybe the goal for a lot of us. And it sort of makes up the last section of my book, where in Entrepreneurial You, I talk about the question, you know, what's it all for? What is our point? You know, okay, it's a great thing to get creative about monetizing your ideas. It's a great thing to create multiple income streams. But why? We'd all like to make a little extra money. But ultimately, what do we want our lives and our lifestyles to look like? And so Jenny, she's the author of a book called Pivot that came out last year. She has been able to really thread the needle well, I think, on setting priorities for herself that are uniquely hers. It's not just the societal script about what you should be doing or what you should want. She was able to set out the things that it really spoke to her. So a couple of times now, she's taken a month and she's done a working vacation from Bali, which is pretty cool. And in fact, earlier this year, she was extremely busy. She had speaking engagements, you know, traveling around for them related to the book. She had just moved in with her boyfriend for the first time. So there was, you know, all of these pressures on her time. And as a result, she had just simply less time to play with in terms of getting her work done. And yet, here is the part that I think is the genius stroke. She was able to, she's earned more this year than she has in any of her previous years. She's, with less time, she's been more successful. And part of the reason is that as she was experiencing this time crunch phenomenon that a lot of us have, she started to think about it systemically. And so she created an online course actually called Delegation Ninja, which systematized her approach to how she was coping with a time shortage in order to be able to get more done. And so she was able not just to think about it strategically and make more money for herself, but also teach other people how to do it as well. So I think that those are some pretty interesting ways of handling common questions. You know, what is my goal and how do I deal with the time pressures that come from modern life? And I think that she's done a nice job of articulating an answer that works for her.
And as a result, smashing a plateau. Yes, Jenny's a great example. Dory, what can we look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up?
Yeah, David, thank you so much. Well, of course, the release October 3rd of Entrepreneurial You is very exciting, and I'm really looking forward to being able to travel around and you know write and speak more about these concepts that I have been researching for the past couple of years that have really helped me in my business. And in fact, I'll mention that if your listeners are interested in developing multiple income streams and thinking strategically about how they can become more entrepreneurial in their own lives, I actually have a free gift. It's an Entrepreneurial You self-assessment. It's 88 questions that walk you step by step through how to think more entrepreneurially and increase your income as a result. Folks can get that for free at doryclark.com/entrepreneur.
That sounds great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And are there other ways that people can follow you?
Yeah, thanks. On my website, doryclark.com, I have more than 400 free articles posted. We talked about consistency and content creation. So I write pretty frequently for places like the Harvard Business Review in the past. I've written a lot for Forbes and Entrepreneur. All of those articles are linked to off of my website, doryclark.com.
Great. Well, Dory, thanks so much for coming back again to join us on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a great discussion. I know we could have gone on a lot longer. You shared some great tips, great insights, and great strategies for our listeners about how they can smash the plateau, be more entrepreneurial, diversify, reduce risk, all great ideas. My guest today has been Dory Clark, author of Entrepreneurial You. Thank you again, Dory, for joining us.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.